thank you for joining us on Talk Chef, the podcast where we talk about Top Chef. I am your host, John Drake. You may know me as Top Scallop. You may also know me as Young Crudo. And I am joined, as always, by the Nash Money Flinionaire. It's Nash Flynn.
Like if cash, only I were a millionaire.
Like the Cash Money Millionaires. Remember the rap group from back in the day?
I don't, but I would like Cash Money Millionaires.
Yeah, all right. So it works on two levels then.
Yeah.
There you go. How you doing this week, Nash?
I'm good. It's been a good week. How about you?
All right. Big day for you today. Your new podcast just launched this morning.
It did. We're very excited. It's called Death and Friends, and you should listen to it if you have any interest in death or history of death, or you're weird or creepy, you know, like me.
Yeah, the first episode is about the bubonic plague. It's very good. I laughed heartily many times. And I recommend it. Find it wherever you find Talk Chef, and it'll be there.
Yeah, it will be there. You can just Google me, too, because then it will come up also.
You're Googleable now. You're so famous. Look at you.
So Googleable.
You know what everyone's waiting to hear about.
I do. Right. And I'm actually super stoked to tell you this one.
All right. What do you got for Nash's protein of the week?
I had venison.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah.
Now, how did you have it? Tell us.
So I had it ground because I'm really mad at deer. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to grind you up.
Hit one with your car recently or something?
No, we live on a farm and we're mostly fully gated in, but we did get the deer sneaking by. They leave a lot of ticks. The chickens eat the ticks, but they don't actually break them down. So they just poop them out. It's just a big pain.
That does sound troubling.
Yeah, you really don't want to get bit by a deer tick. So we're just really mad at deer.
There's a band I like called Deer Tick. I didn't know that. I thought that was just two words they combined. I didn't know it was a real thing.
Oh, they're real things. They carry Lyme disease. It can make it pretty sick. Also, tick paralysis, which sucks more and less than Lyme disease.
Maybe you can cover it on Death and Friends.
Oh, God.
So what did you do with the venison? Did you make like burgers or sausages or?
I made tacos with it.
Nice. Like instead of ground beef, you did ground venison?
Yeah, it was good. A little bit of citrus, a little bit of spice, and then just that in a corn shell. It was really, really good. I like it less than bison, but more than beef.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a gamier flavor than bison, mm-hmm. I would say. It's about as lean, kind of a similar flavor. It makes a good burger. It makes really good sausage. I've only had it like a venison cutlet or a venison chop once in my life. And I was very young at the time, so I didn't like it then, but I'd be willing to try it again.
Yeah, it's an interesting meat. It cooks more gamey than it tastes. So that was kind of cool. It was between that or bison steak, but I'll do bison steak next time because they're looking pretty good in my refrigerator.
All right. Very good. All right. That's an exciting protein. Venison. I've been waiting for that one. Yeah, you eat more interesting proteins in a week than I eat in a year. I have like chicken breast.
This is new for us, you know?
Trying it all out. You got to see what you like. Yeah, I get it. I appreciate that.
Lobster's on my list. And every time I go to have it, I get scared.
Because it looks like a giant cockroach?
Yeah, it's like a big old bug. It's just a sea bug. And I don't like the ocean. We've covered that many times. I really don't like anything that stayed in the ocean. But I dislike bugs that stayed in the ocean most of all.
Not a shellfish person, huh?
I'm just scared of them, you know?
I don't like crawfish specifically because I think once bugs become a certain size, they stop looking like bugs to me, like lobsters or crabs. But then crawfish are small enough where it just looks like something you'd find in your house. And also the labor to yield on a crawfish is very low.
Right. But the exoskeleton thing is hard to get past.
Yeah. But I like lobster. It's one of my wife Jamie's favorite foods, so we eat it a few times a year. I wouldn't say often. And it's easy to make if you just steam it.
See, I really want to eat lobster mac and cheese. And that's been true. Like every time I see it on TV, I'm like, God, that looks delicious. Because lobster, you just cover in butter and then it tastes like butter, right? So then you're just adding butter to your mac and cheese. And then every time we go to be like, all right, let's make it. I'm always like, ugh.
Yeah, it's labor intent, just breaking all the meat down. If you steam a whole lobster, you give it to everyone. Like, all right, take care of yourselves. Figure this out for yourself. But when you're making mac and cheese, you have to get all the meat out ahead of time. It's a pain. My grandma used to just stab him in the head with a knife, like stab him in the head and then yank the knife back. And I don't have the confidence for that. I'm afraid I'll miss and it'll get real mad at me and attack me or something.
Yeah, grandma sounds like a badass.
She wasn't fucking around. I'll tell you that much.
So lobsters everywhere knew it.
That's right. They would tremble at the grocery store in their weird little tank. Before we get into this week's episode, quick update. Sarah made it out of 1 week of Last Chance Kitchen. So
here we go.
All hope is not lost yet. We still have a shot at seeing Sarah back in the competition. Yeah. We've dropped any pretense of not just openly rooting for Sarah at this point, I think.
Even the other contestants, to be honest with you.
They were pretty bummed. Dawn looked like she was going to cry. I think she did cry.
She did cry. Everyone was like, man, I thought Sarah was going to win. It's like, you guys understand you were competing for the same thing, right? You know that that's where you're shooting. Like, they were all like, oh, Sarah was going to take this thing. It's such a shock.
I think Shota said she was his pick to win. I was like, you're not your own pick to win.
Right? You could pick yourself. It's not selfish.
Yeah. And Dawn may be feeling a little bit of guilt because maybe it was the progression of the meal that caused Sarah's dishes to be on the bottom. And that was kind of due to Dawn not having a clear idea what she wanted to do for quite some time. So maybe a little guilt there. But let's talk about this quickfire. What'd you think of the vintage equipment?
I was about it. I would never use vintage equipment because I'm sort of a bougie bitch, to be honest with you.
Your farm life and your deer tits.
It makes absolutely no sense. But I'm like, no. If it wasn't made in 2021, I'm not using it. You know what I mean?
I was a little offended they called those ovens vintage because every apartment I lived in New York had one of those ovens. My mom still has one of those ovens. The stupid electric coils. They're the worst things in the world. They're never even. They're never level. There's always, your pan is always tilted.
Like, this whole episode was spent, like, shitting on people that cook in their regular life. Like, this whole episode was like, you guys are stupid and you're worthless.
Yeah, make this so home cooks could do it. Write it in crayon. Yeah.
It's like, you guys, you know who watches this show, right? You know who your audience is, right?
People who cook at home, by and large.
It's us.
Chef. A little shot. Yeah. Maybe that's not here to make friends, is Top Chef versus their audience. That could be the category, because this episode was very light on conflict. So I think we're going to have to nominate Top Chef versus their audience for not here to make friends. So they had to use vintage equipment and cook with hipster ingredients. Now, is there some hipster ingredients you're particularly fond of?
Oh, God.
You're queen of the
hipsters. This is like even more hipster than I think the show got today. But I'm very, very partial to steamed oat milk in my coffee.
No shit. My note right here is like the hipster thing I consume the most is oat milk. So I fucks with it. It's so good.
It is really good.
I get the extra creamy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start out. It's really good. Frothing it for my coffee, and that'll
be delicious. I have a frother. It's very worth it.
I got my wife a frother, but one of the stupid little handheld ones, and she just got the electric frother today, so I'm excited to try that out. I'm gonna steal that and make it mine.
It's actually great if you're a child like me and you froth your coffee in the morning. It's perfect, but then later you can put chocolate milk in it and make hot coffee.
Now we're talking. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. That's what mine gets used for primarily is hot cocoa.
I use a lot of avocado and sunflower oil because they have high smoking points and they're good for pan frying and stuff.
Yeah. I like black garlic. That's one of the things I've been into lately.
Ooh, yeah. Black garlic's delicious. That's really, a pretty hipster ingredient.
It is real hipster, yeah. Yeah. I actually bought the granulated version because it's a little bit easier to deal with.
Yeah. Where do you get that? Is that like a Penzi's?
Trader Joe's.
All right. I guess I got to go to
Trader Joe's. A sponsor of this podcast maybe someday.
Yeah, give us money, Trader Joe's. Or just give us products.
Give us black garlic.
We'll do it for all the black garlic. I guess every challenge is a hipster challenge in Portland, you know?
Mm. Yeah. But especially when Gabriel was there.
Right. I don't know what he's doing now. Do you think they made him stay at the hotel? Even though he lives 2 miles away?
You know, because you know he's going to be back for whatever they do at the end.
When you got to pick a sous chef or whatever.
Yeah. They'll send him out foraging for mushrooms every day.
That's probably what he's doing.
Be a good boy.
So we had, as the guest quickfire judges, Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein from Portlandia. Awesome. Are you a Portlandia fan?
I've only seen a couple episodes. That's something I keep meaning to correct. But one of my favorite things that they ever did was the sketch about knowing your meat, because that's very, very quickly become my life.
Meet your meat and all that? Yeah, that was like a big movement a few years ago. I didn't watch all of it either, but I still put a bird on it in everyday conversation quite often. It's like a running joke I have in my family. So
amazing.
Put a bird on it. So yeah, I like Portlandia. It was good to see them. I didn't know if all their improv banter landed quite like they were hoping.
Yeah. It did seem a little bit forced and awkward.
Yeah.
But
they also stepped on Padma's toes and said her lines for her. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. I don't think Padma liked that much.
No.
Out of all the people.
You got the vibe somebody was going to get a talking to in the back.
Yeah.
But, you know, we worked through it. Padma, Fashion Watch, not much today during the quickfire.
Oh, but wait, because she was wearing a very long blazer type thing. They definitely had the sleeves ripped off. Like, they weren't just taken off. They did not exist. If you looked at the seams, those things got ripped off like the whole.
Yeah. Really, she showed up on set that day and was like, I no longer want these sleeves.
It's hot in here.
Get rid of them for me. And then... But I was happy to see her David Koresh sunglasses make a comeback when she was sitting at the table for the elimination challenge. But more on that later. What did you think of the food that came out of the quickfire? Any dishes stand out to you?
So many good dishes out of the quickfire, I think. to be honest.
More so than out of the elimination challenge, I would wager.
Yeah, I agree. Pretty much everything looked really good, actually. I mean, some things didn't taste good, apparently, but I thought it all looked good.
I don't know about Gabe's Hasselback purple yam. It was a little monochromatic, and they didn't make any mention of how it tasted. It was right. just, it looks like sausages. Yeah, I don't know. They made fun of the Hasselback technique a lot, but they didn't really give a lot of notes. And I don't know, yeah, it didn't look like something I'd want to eat. But that being said, yeah, I think my pick for a favorite dish, which I'll get into later, came out of the quickfire.
Yeah.
More on that later. And then we find out pretty cool challenge for the elimination challenge.
Yeah.
The chefs need to make a dish, but also need to write down the recipe as they make it. And come to find out, they will be making it concurrently with one of the all-stars and then see how they match up. It's basically testing their recipe writing skills to see if they can write an achievable and coherent recipe that can be done in 90 minutes by a quote-unquote stupid idiot home chef, I think is what the show said.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. I think this is a great challenge, but in execution, I have a lot of issues with it.
No, I agree. I was really excited when they announced it, but then when I was just seeing it play out, I was like, oh. What's your issue?
I have a couple of them. So they want non-chefs to make it, right? But the people they have making them are chefs. They're like, yes. We're going to measure you guys writing to idiots, like mouth-breathing morons. But we're going to use these very smart people who are already really good at it. In 90 minutes. Okay, fine, whatever. They can pretend to be dumb for 90 minutes. But then at the end of the episode, we get Tom being like, I've never written a recipe by myself. My wife writes them. So it's kind of like, what are we really measuring here?
Right. It's not like you need the skill to be successful then because right. Tom's made it this far.
And nobody would actually write a recipe for a new dish in 90 minutes. We've already covered that.
Right. Well, they had all night to think of it. Right. But still, yeah, the measurements part, as somebody who cooks almost every day, yeah, I never measure anything unless I'm baking. My measuring cups do not come out. So that's probably the toughest part. And we saw that where people got their proportions all out of whack. Because it's just not a skill that chefs typically have. Once you're a couple years out of culinary school, yeah, no one's taking out their measuring equipment. Right. So
except for Chris, who was like, I absolutely love measuring my ingredients.
I think he was being sarcastic.
It was so close to genuine. I was like,
he's very dry. But then also, his measurements were way off. So I hope he doesn't really love it because yeah, that would be embarrassing for him because he's not good at it. But he loves making pasta, and apparently he's not good at that either. So,
hey, do what you love, and you'll never work a day in your life because you're bad at it.
Yeah, and you'll be sent home. Wow, we're getting sassy today.
Yeah, we are. It's okay.
Blaze had his wild hair back. Did you notice?
Yes. I said, Richard's hair watch. It looks dirty but large.
Dirty but large. All right.
It looked darker than it normally does, I feel like.
I could see that. Maybe spending less time in the sun and starting to lose some of its San Diego tint.
Yeah.
Could be. You know, it's not sun-kissed like it usually is anymore. He's in the Pacific Northwest, missing out on that sunlight.
Poor Richard.
Yeah, and then the food that I don't know if they were holding back because they knew they had to make it palatable for a home chef, or they were just in their own head about it and trying, you know, but none of the food really jumped out at me from this elimination challenge.
Yeah. I think it was another Top Chefism where they were overthinking the recipe part of it and not, like, food that they would want to eat, except for Maria, who goes in the complete opposite direction. It's just like, fuck it, 8 pounds of meat in a pot.
Nothing but respect for that. Yeah, three pressure cookers worth of soup just going at the same time. And it looked good. That was probably the thing from the elimination I would have wanted to eat the most.
And I was worried about her because she spends the recipe planning time being like, I have ADHD. I can't do this. And I was like, give this girl an extra 20 minutes. Like, ADHD brains are hard. Let's just, you know what? Give her time. Just be like, you can do whatever you want. But she pulled it out. She pulled it out. And I mean, I think Kristen was like really, really worried about how much meat it was. But we got a couple like sasses from the judges about the portion sizing here. And they were like, regular people can't eat this. And I've got news for you, Gail. Regular people can't eat an entire bowl of soup, I promise.
Yeah. Do you know when I make chili, do you know how many bowls of chili I have? And that one night, the first night I make it, like four.
Yeah.
That's with cornbread and shredded cheese and like sour cream.
Come on. Yeah.
I would have eaten two bowls of that soup.
Yeah. Gail was like, this will feed 72 people. And I was like, it will absolutely not do that.
It will fill three people if they're not worried about being on TV.
Yeah. So, come on. Yeah. Like, this was the episode where they were just like, let's insult everyone that's ever watched the show.
I don't really get the portion size criticism that comes up all the time because nobody said you have to fucking finish it. If they gave you more food than you necessarily want, you don't have to eat it all.
Just bring it home. Like, that's how a restaurant works.
Get a doggy bag. No, just eat as much as you need to judge it and then leave it.
Yeah.
I'll never forget Grayson serving them like full 18-ounce ribeyes, one each on their plate during a challenge. Nothing but respect for my queen, Grayson.
I mean, that's how people want to eat in the regular world where we exist. I will absolutely eat an entire bowl of soup. I'm sorry, Gail. I won't apologize for that. I just did.
I'm sorry, but I will not apologize. It was fun watching the All-Stars get back in the kitchen, though. I haven't seen Kwame cook in many years. It was a lot of fun watching them all throw down.
And Kwame had this moment where he's looking at Byron's recipe, and he's just, I am following this exactly.
Yeah. He had to sear the pork belly, and he was like, well, he didn't say use oil, so I'm putting it dry. I respect the pettiness.
It's like, it's no. So good.
I will not use my brain that is, you know, such a culinary wonder. I will follow this recipe. And that's what the challenge called for. So I respect it, but it was fun watching him like knowingly fuck up a dish from step one.
He says, this is my job today. And you know what? He's the only one that did that. And, you know, it's more offensive for the home cook who was like, yo, I would probably put some kind of fat in that pan, but like also... Gotta love Kwame for it, you know?
Yeah, no, he stuck to the parameters of the challenge, and I'm not gonna fault him for that. We got Tom in the
kitchen.
I'm
sorry, that was Shota's dish.
Shota's
dish,
not, right.
Yeah, not that Byron. Was not Byron's dish. That comes later.
Yeah, Byron's dish looked pretty sad, all things considered. But we got Tom in the kitchen psyching everybody out.
Love it.
Love seeing Tom in the kitchen going around and fucking with people. One of my favorite things. We didn't have a lot of stuff that met the criteria of our usual categories this week, sadly. Just an episode where that was off. We weren't hitting those notes. We had no scallops, no crudo. We did have two scallop dishes in Last Chance Kitchen this week, but we've already established we're not counting those towards our season-long total. Yeah, so you want to jump into the categories, go over what we do talk about?
Yeah.
So I had nothing for Cliche Kitchen, but I understand you did have one note.
I did. Every once in a while in Top Chef, we get to this point where we haven't checked in with somebody in a while, and then they get on the talking head. It's like shocking. They have a kid. Today's Cliche Kitchen, Shota has an 8-year-old. He was just like, I've never ever spoken about this, but it's defined my entire identity and my experience on Top Chef.
Yeah, we're in episode 9. I was shocked to find out that Shota has an 8-year-old son. It was very touching, though, watching him talk about him.
Yeah, I mean, it was gorgeous and fine, but it always comes sort of like somebody we haven't talked to in a while. It's been floating middle of the pack. They haven't been very dramatic. And then, bam,
bring child. Family. Yeah, that is a tried and true Top Chef, a strategy by the producers.
Yeah. Maybe he said it week 1 and they were like, you know what? We'll save this little tidbit for week 9. It's a surprise. He's a baby daddy, you know?
When we're in the dog days of Top Chef, like Restaurant Wars is over, but we still got a few weeks before the finale and we need something to get people talking.
Yeah. We need to care about someone.
Yeah.
Shota kid.
That was surprising, but Shota's interactions with the rest of the cast, he comes across pretty paternal. I think he has a lot of paternal instincts, so that was nice to see. You know, he's always tasting everybody else's food, giving them little pointers, you know, playing catch with Avishar, I think. I saw them playing catch one day. Mm-hmm. So
we did get sort of a Shota burn right in the middle or the very beginning of the episode where he's talking to Byron and he says, you cook subtle for your personality, dude. And I was like, does he?
Yeah, are you saying Byron is kind of loud and annoying, or are you saying that Byron's food is kind of boring? Because there's only
really
two ways
good.
To read that. Neither of them are positive. That was, I would say that's probably the closest we're going to get to for not here to make friends this week.
I have Dawn on that one. Right at the opening, she's like, I wish there was something I could have done to get Sarah to stay. I feel like I really could have helped her. And it's yes. You probably could have 25 minutes ago when you didn't say anything about your dish.
A little sabotage, yeah. I did have Kwame getting mad at Byron for his long-ass recipe, even though, you know, it's hard to include the judges on here.
But we do every time.
He looked legitimately angry at Byron when he was like, this recipe's 4 fucking pages.
Yeah.
So that was fun. I love Kwame.
I do too.
I
would watch Kwame do anything. I would watch Kwame watch paint dry.
Yeah, seriously. I was really hoping he'd come back as a contestant eventually, but I feel like now, once you've been like a season-long judge, that door has kind of closed for you.
Yeah. Maybe he'll do amateurs or something with Gail.
Yeah. I'm sure they're going to have you, because clearly they filmed amateurs while they filmed this season, so all those same chefs that were in the bubble are probably going to be popping in throughout, so I'll check it out just for that, I think. But for the bit in the ass, one thing, a lot of Chris in this category.
Yeah. Chris everywhere in this category.
Yeah, he's all over the map. I had him first in the quickfire. He was making his seared cauliflower, but he was like, oh, it's not searing. But he didn't adjust his, you know, his technique at all for the equipment. He just did what he would have done on a gas flame over these electric coils, and then his dish came out bad. So,
surprising.
Yeah, bit in the ass right there. I don't want to take all the Chris shine, though, so now you do one.
Chris, third pasta attempt. He's just so determined to prove the judges wrong that they're wrong about his like pasta making technique. And we get, he's like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm making the sorghum gnocchi and I'm just going to figure it out and stop doing this.
I was like 99% sure what was going to happen was his gnocchi was going to be amazing. Melissa's gnocchi was going to be terrible because he didn't write the recipe well. And he would squeak by because they're like, well, he made good gnocchi, but he didn't give good instructions. So he's on the bottom, but it's not egregious enough to send him home for. And I'd be like, he's fucking going to survive another week. But no, even his gnocchi, which he didn't really have to measure because he knows how to make it, or so he claims, was dense and bad and sent him home.
And this is what I don't get. So I make gnocchi a lot, actually, with potato, like you're supposed to, or with ricotta, which is also really good. Sorghum is a real dense material. And I don't know why you thought it was going to make a good pasta dough for this.
Yeah. And he was really like manhandling that dough, yeah, which only makes it more dense.
Right. If you're working with potato, it's kind of like a little different. Like sorghum is real, it can get real gummy real fast, and it can go paste. Like this was not the choice.
Yeah. I mean, it looked good. It looked appetizing. I liked everything you did with the pecans and the, I think it was a Romesco sauce and the braised dandelion greens. Like I had it down as a potential favorite dish until I heard the tasting notes and I was like, oh yeah, I don't want to eat that.
And you know what annoyed me the most about when they tasted this is they made a Melissa feel bad and apologize for her dish.
Right. She followed the recipe.
They were like, yeah, maybe Melissa owes you an apology. She literally had to look at him and be like, yeah, I'm sorry. And it's like, no, baby. No. This is not how this goes. And then in the judges table, they even said again that hers was bad. And they like called it out as being bad. Like she's a really good chef, but this dish was bad. It's like, she is not being judged here. She's following instructions.
Melissa King knows how to make fucking gnocchi. Are you kidding me? Right? This is not her fault.
I was like heated. All my notes are just swearing.
That was a little, what do you want them to do? Do you want them to follow the recipe or do you want them to troubleshoot along the way? If you want them to follow the recipe, it's not her fault that the pasta came out terrible.
Yes.
Chris like, admitted he fucked like up the measure. He said he measured in cups and not weight, right? Was that what he said? Yeah, that was it. Yeah. So he, right there, he admitted he fucked up the proportions. And she just followed it.
We're like, you know, Melissa was following your instructions. Your recipe wasn't prepped well. Like they don't even really imply that. They're just like, you know, and then Melissa fucked up his side of it. And it's like, no. That's not what happened.
He fucked up his side. He fucked up Melissa's side of it. And she executed it as written.
And this is the problem when you're doing this for home chefs. This is supposed to be home chef recipes. But then you have these people that you're already familiar with who are very good chefs, trying to follow, either they are following it to the letter, which is what they're instructed to do, but then you shit all over them because it's bad. And I could talk about this for the next 45 minutes.
I could tell you're getting worked up.
It was very, very irritating watching Padma be like, Melissa's is terrible. Why don't you apologize to Chris? And it's like,
yeah, any home chef who's ever made pasta knows if your recipe's gummy and pasty, you add flour to it. Melissa would have done that if she was just told to make this dish, you know, as described, not follow the recipe. So yeah, that was a pretty upsetting.
And she even says, I wouldn't serve this, but I have to because it's not my dish.
No, she was following the recipe, just like Kwame when he burned the pork belly in this oven. I mean, when he tried to sear it without any fat in the pan, you know, he was following what he was told.
Right. And you know what? For the record, Talk Chef, Melissa, if you're listening, I hope you are. We are sorry. We are going to apologize on behalf of everyone else.
We stand, and we will not stand for any Melissa slander.
Correct.
I thought Jamie putting foie in a recipe for home cooks was going to get called out more as like this isn't really an ingredient accessible to everyday chefs, but they kind of commended her for it, even though they didn't like her dish very much. Nobody really called that out. But I had that for a bit in the ass because, you know, like you can find foie gras pâté, but I think she was just searing like loaves of foie gras, which is very hard to find unless you're going to a specialty French market or something.
See, I'm surprised that they didn't call it out as something that normal home chefs wouldn't cook with, because the narrative has been so like these like Neanderthals in their homes, like eating cereal for every meal. You know, there was like this, oh, well, maybe they don't even know what foie gras is. But at the same time, they were like, it's impossible for us to conceive of a place that doesn't have foie gras loaves. You know,
You can't even really go to Whole Foods and find that. Even the fancy grocery stores don't carry that typically, or at least not that I see.
Can't conceptualize that there are places in America that don't have it, I guess.
And then Maria not taking the time to actually like fix her proportions of her recipe. Like, the only thing I agree with is that it is wasteful to make that much soup unless you're going to eat it all. There's no way she served all her soup. So
maybe she brought it home. I mean, apparently you can just take like salmon home with you from Judge's table and eat it.
That's
I was
true.
Like, why can't you bring your soup home?
We should check in at the hotel next week and they're all just eating big bowls of Maria's soup. Like, actually, until the finale.
Yeah. Everyone's just eating leftover soup. And we're like, you could have finished that in 2 days if you just ate regular proportions.
Especially if you get like some crusty bread to dip in it. Oh, dipping bread in soup is the best.
Yes, it is.
What did you have for your harshest criticism?
Okay. So what I loved about this episode was we didn't really get anything until the judges were alone. And then it was like, mean thing, like one after another. So I had a hard time picking, to be honest.
All right, well, hit me with some top choices.
All right, so we've got Richard on Byron. To take a dish and make it complicated, though, what Byron did to me is a pretty big offense.
He called his fish stock criminal. He said 19 ingredients in a fish stock is criminal.
Yes.
So, that's
and then
pretty...
Tom, right behind him, was how do you take these ingredients and make them that flavorless?
Where was all this fire at Judge's table? They are holding back this season, you could tell. Because, yeah, they definitely did not say anything of the sort. There's all, you know, for all the ingredients, it didn't really taste like it. And then as soon as he walks, fuck that guy, fuck his stupid dish.
All of those were happening when the contestants weren't in the room. When they are in the room, Tom says to Byron, there's just no payoff. Which is, you could have said those mean things to his face.
We're not advocating for that, by the way. We don't want them
we're
to
not.
Be mean.
But if you're going to be mean and they're going to see it on TV later, you might as well at least tell them.
It's not like Tom doesn't have a history of giving harsh criticism to people's faces.
Yeah. And this isn't a secret. Like, Tom didn't send this to us and was like, don't tell Byron. Like,
right.
It's on TV.
Yeah. Very strange. And then Gail was the only one who, like, kind of stood up and criticized the chef to their face when she reminded Chris that this is the third time he's fucked up pasta dough. Only nine episodes of Top Chef. So. That's one-third of the elimination challenges he's made bad pasta.
Just, I can't help noticing. Ooh, Gail, you have such a way with words. It's beautiful.
That's basically like the... I just think it's funny how...
Yeah.
of Top
yeah,
Chef.
Beautiful. But then we have Padma, who just couldn't let it go. She has my actual, this is the harshest criticism, because it's not even about a contestant. It's Melissa, who has just won All Stars, had the most abysmal plate of food. Why, Padma?
She made the abysmal plate of food because somebody fucking told her to.
So stressed.
Yeah. All right. Okay, let's not get all worked up again. So what did you pick for your favorite dish from the episode?
Okay, let's think about this, because this is a quick fire dish, because I really think that the elimination challenge dishes were just too much thinking and not enough cooking. Honestly, I think Don's cornbread looked the best one. And I'm still mad at Don. So I was really, really mad about picking this. But it really did look good. And I don't even like cornbread. So
I can't be mad at Don for too long because now she is my pick to win it. I think her food always looks awesome. That cornbread with pancetta jam sounded really good, looked really good. Yeah. You're not even a big cornbread fan. I am a big cornbread fan. So that spoke to me. But I had that down as a possible selection. My backup was Maria's tomato soup, another quick fire dish. Not to say her soup from the Elimination Challenge didn't look good, but something about that tomato soup just spoke to me.
It looked so good. Yeah.
And then I have Chris's sorghum gnocchi in my notes, and then I crossed it out many times after I heard them eat it, got their tasting notes. Not the best food I've seen on Top Chef this episode. Oh. I liked the challenge in theory, like you said, but not so much in execution.
Right. And I feel like, you know, Gabe was the winner of this episode, and I had problems with that from when it showed up on the plate. You know, they said, oh, it looks identical. That's what Gabe says when he's looking at the two plates side by side. And then they show us, and I was like, does it? No, it doesn't at all.
Gregory went much heavier on the sauce. His fish was basically smothered, and then Gabe's sauce was more like just spread around the plate. I'm sure they both tasted great, but steamed fish also not my favorite thing in general.
No.
So... It didn't jump out to me. But then again, it's one of those dishes that may not be the most visually appealing, but until you taste it, you can't really be sure. We're only going off what we can go off of.
What I'm finding is, no matter what Gabe does, they are horny for his sauces.
Yeah, they love some Gabe sauce.
And I don't get that. You know what I mean?
I don't know. His sauces all sound pretty good, but it's starting to feel kind of like Sarah with her yogurt. It's becoming like a, could you make a good dish if you didn't have this tool?
Right. And his moles are also part of the sauce thing. And I'm just, I don't know.
So what do you think is going home next?
I think it's Byron. I think it has to be.
Yeah. That was actually my pick as well.
Yeah.
We're doubling up picks. There's not enough chefs left for me to pick somebody else. It's got to be
Plus,
Byron.
You got to start looking at the people that just have not been able to hang, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sad to say this, but I think after Byron, it has to be Maria, which saddens me to my core.
I mean, we're getting down to it, though.
Yeah.
We're getting down to the nitty gritty. I could see Jamie maybe just because she's a little inconsistent.
Jamie.
But yeah, Byron's too up and down.
Yeah.
It's going to catch up to him eventually. And I think you're right. I think next week might be his time.
Yeah. He really is like a chef of circumstance. If you give him the right tools, he can execute it well. If you give him the wrong tools or it's out of his sort of comfort zone, he can't really adjust himself to that measure. And
right.
I think that's really been his issue.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend about this today, and I don't think that the person who wins Top Chef every year is necessarily the best chef, but it's about gamesmanship and adaptability. And I'm getting the sense that Byron is lacking in those departments.
Yeah.
He clearly knows how to make great food. We've seen it, but I think he gets flustered inside his own head a little bit too easily.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yep. Anything else you want to say about this episode, except for the fact that you're mad at the Top Chef producers and judges?
I'm also mad at Richard. Richard, while he's tasting, I think, Don's dish, says, yeah, you know, protein, veg, sauce. Even a home cook can handle that. Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you. In case we weren't certain as to whether we were supposed to be the burned audience in this episode, we are certain now.
The lowly home cooks, the dregs of the food world.
Trash people that eat cereal and bowls of stew. Just disgusting.
It's the second time you've brought up cereal. How much cereal did you eat today?
Like none. I just feel like that's like the quintessential thing that people think Americans eat for like meals, is cereal.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've definitely had cereal for a meal before. Not today, but like in the past. So I'm proving your point.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was Talk Chef. Thanks so much for joining us, you guys. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe if you can do that where you listen to podcasts. If not, just keep listening. We love you.
We do.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, finger guns this time. No, wait. Finger guns.
No. Do you know what this is? I can't.